Marry me, Celestia Blythe.
Celestia's
Marry
laughter
you.
Echoed through the ballroom.
You cannot be serious.
The music stopped. Conversations died. Dozens of guests turned to look. Standing before her was a young nobleman, handsome, wealthy, respected, a man many women dreamed of marrying. Yet Celestia looked at him as though he had insulted her. Then she said the words that would follow her for the rest of her life.
If I ever marry, it certainly won't be a man like you.
Gasps spread through the crowd. The young nobleman's face turned pale. His humiliation was complete. But Celestia wasn't finished.
You may be good enough for other women, but not for me.
The ballroom fell silent. Some guests looked away. Others stared in disbelief. Even Celestia's own parents lowered their heads in embarrassment. Yet she felt proud, because at that moment, Miss Celestia Blythe believed she deserved more than noblemen, more than earls, more than dukes. She believed she deserved a prince, perhaps even a king, and that belief would cost her everything. Welcome back to Duke and Duchess. Before we begin, like this video, subscribe to the channel, and tell us in the comments where you're watching from. Now let's go back to the beginning, to a small Yorkshire village where a beautiful young girl first began believing the world revolved around her. Victorian Yorkshire was a land of rolling green hills, narrow dirt roads, and stone cottages that seemed to grow naturally from the countryside itself. Smoke rose gently from chimneys each morning, while farmers guided horses across damp fields under grey skies. Life was simple, demanding, and often difficult for families who depended on hard work to survive. Among those families were the Blythes. Samuel Blythe and his wife Eleanor lived in a modest cottage on the edge of a small village. Their home was humble but warm, filled with the scent of fresh bread, vegetable stew, and firewood burning in the hearth. Every coin they earned came through labour. Samuel spent long days working fields owned by wealthier landowners, while Eleanor managed the household and tended a small vegetable garden behind the cottage. They had two daughters. The elder daughter, Agnes, had inherited her mother's gentle nature. She was slightly plump, with ordinary features that attracted little attention. Every morning she helped her mother knead dough, wash clothes in cold water, gather vegetables, and carry heavy baskets back from the market. Though the work left her exhausted, she rarely complained. The younger daughter was different. Celestia Blythe possessed a beauty that people noticed immediately. As a child, villagers often paused conversations when she passed. Elderly women stroked her hair and called her the prettiest girl in Yorkshire. Visitors arriving at the village frequently brought ribbons, sweets, or small trinkets for her. Even strangers smiled when they saw her. At first, Eleanor worried little about the attention. She believed compliments would pass like summer rain. Instead, they accumulated year after year. By the time Celestia entered her teenage years, she had grown accustomed to admiration. She expected it. She enjoyed it. Whenever guests visited the cottage, their eyes naturally drifted toward her. Very few noticed Agnes. Celestia noticed that difference, and she never forgot it. One afternoon, Eleanor asked both daughters to help wash clothes beside a large wooden basin.
Come help with
Agnes immediately rolled up her sleeves. Celestia remained seated.
I cannot spend the afternoon doing that. And why not? I just can't.
Celestia glanced at her reflection in a nearby window.
The water will ruin my skin.
Agnes stared in disbelief. Their mother sighed heavily.
Work has never harmed an honest woman.
It might harm a beautiful one. You think too much of your looks,
child. As months passed, excuses became routine.
We'll see about that.
She refused to carry buckets from the village well because they were too heavy. She avoided helping in muddy fields because she disliked dirt on her shoes. She stayed indoors when sunlight was strong, claiming she did not want her complexion darkened. Meanwhile, Agnes completed the tasks her sister abandoned. The imbalance frustrated Samuel. One evening, during supper, while eating stew made from potatoes and carrots grown in their own garden, he spoke firmly. Beauty will not feed you when life becomes difficult. Celestia barely looked up from her plate. I doubt life will ever become difficult for me. The confidence in her voice unsettled both parents. Agnes quietly continued eating. The following week, several village girls gathered near the market square. When one of them complimented Agnes's kindness, Celestia laughed. Kindness is useful when there is nothing else remarkable about you. The words landed heavily. Agnes lowered her eyes. Later that day, Celestia made matters worse. No man would notice Agnes in a crowded room, she said casually. Agnes pretended not to hear, but Eleanor heard, and so did Samuel. That evening, Eleanor sat beside her younger daughter. The fire crackled softly, while rain tapped against the cottage windows. Listen carefully, Celestia. Beauty fades, character remains. Celestia smiled. I've heard that 100 times. Then perhaps it is time you believed it. Celestia shook her head. People praised her beauty everywhere she went. Why should she believe otherwise? As years passed, her imagination drifted beyond Yorkshire. Whenever newspapers or illustrated magazines arrived in the village, she eagerly searched for images of grand London mansions, elegant ballrooms, noble families, and royal events. She studied portraits of duchesses wearing jewels and admired sketches of magnificent estates surrounded by gardens larger than entire villages. The more she looked, the less satisfied she became with ordinary life. She began speaking about wealth, castles, and royalty as though they were part of her future. While Agnes found happiness helping her family, Celestia dreamed of chandeliers, silk gowns, and noble titles. In her mind, the village had become too small, the people too ordinary, the future too limited. Late one evening, after everyone else had gone to bed, Celestia sat alone near a candle and opened a magazine she had read countless times. A portrait of royalty stared back at her. She traced the image carefully with her fingertips. Then she smiled. One day, she promised herself, she would belong to a world far greater than this village. And when that day came, she would never marry an ordinary man.
By the time Celestia Blythe reached adulthood, her beauty had become the subject of conversation far beyond her village. Men who had never spoken to her knew her name. Travellers passing through Yorkshire often heard stories about the striking young woman whose appearance seemed too remarkable for such a quiet countryside. The attention delighted her. Whenever village gatherings took place, Celestia could easily spot young men watching her from a distance. Some rehearsed conversations before approaching, others stumbled over their words the moment she looked at them. She quickly discovered she enjoyed the power their admiration gave her. One spring afternoon, a farmer's son arrived carrying a basket filled with fresh apples, homemade bread, and a small bouquet of wildflowers. He nervously handed the gifts to her. Celestia accepted them without hesitation. Then she asked how much land he owned. When he answered honestly, she smiled in disappointment. That isn't nearly enough. The young man's face reddened. He left shortly afterward, while Celestia carried the basket inside as though nothing had happened. Another suitor arrived several weeks later. He was hard-working, respectful, and well-liked throughout the village. Unfortunately for him, he spoke with a strong regional accent. Celestia listened for only a few minutes before losing interest. After he departed, she mocked the way he pronounced certain words. Her laughter amused nobody except herself. A third young man appeared later that year. He was handsome by most standards, kind, honest, eager to impress her. Celestia rejected him because she disliked his smile. Such decisions became common. Each rejection increased her confidence. Each disappointed admirer strengthened her belief that someone better would eventually arrive. Word of her beauty continued spreading. Soon the visitors calling upon the Blythe family were no longer limited to local villages. Successful merchants arrived from nearby towns, landowners travelled from neighbouring counties, gentlemen dressed in fine coats appeared carrying expensive gifts. The modest Blythe cottage welcomed people from social circles the family had never previously encountered.
yet Celestia dismissed them all. Some she considered too old, others too ordinary. A few were wealthy but lacked titles. Nothing seemed sufficient. As months passed, her refusals became increasingly theatrical. She enjoyed watching hopeful expressions disappear. The disappointment of others no longer troubled her. Then Lord Theodore Ashcroft entered her life. Unlike many of the men who pursued her, Theodore possessed everything most women desired. He was handsome, educated, well-spoken. His family held a respected position within society. His wealth ensured comfort and security. Most importantly, he treated people with genuine kindness. When he visited the Blythe home, he greeted Samuel respectfully and thanked Eleanor for every meal she served. He spoke kindly to Agnes and never acted superior despite his noble status. Theodore's affection for Celestia was obvious. Everyone could see it. He listened attentively whenever she spoke and seemed genuinely captivated by her. For a brief moment, Eleanor hoped her daughter might finally make a sensible choice. Instead, Celestia became even more arrogant.
Celestia, will you do me the honor of becoming
marriage.
My wife?
She refused.
Theodore, this is quite
months
unexpected.
Later, he tried again. She refused again. The third time proved far worse. During a community gathering attended by dozens of villagers,
Celestia,
Theodore spoke openly about his feelings. He described the future he hoped they could build
Theodore,
together. His sincerity was impossible to doubt. Many people watching felt moved by his words. Celestia laughed, not a nervous laugh, not an embarrassed laugh, a cruel one. Love, she said, loud enough for others to hear. Theodore fell silent. Celestia continued, love may satisfy ordinary women. Several villagers exchanged uncomfortable glances. She looked directly at Theodore. But I deserve much more than that. The humiliation spread across his face. Still, she wasn't finished. There are greater things waiting for me than becoming Lady Ashcroft. The gathering became painfully quiet. Theodore said nothing further. He left shortly afterward carrying the weight of her rejection. Although heartbroken, he still hoped maturity might eventually change her. That evening, Samuel confronted his daughter. "You are making a terrible mistake." Celestia dismissed the warning. Agnes defended Theodore. "He is a good man." Celestia turned toward her sister. "A woman who looks like you should not give advice on marriage." The words struck harder than any previous insult. Agnes lowered her eyes. Margaret Hensley, Celestia's closest friend, was equally troubled. She reminded Celestia that character mattered more than status. Celestia disagreed. In her mind, Yorkshire had become a prison. Every field, every cottage, every familiar face reminded her of limitations she refused to accept. One evening, she gathered her family and announced her decision. She was leaving for London. The room fell silent. Samuel stared at her. Eleanor's expression filled with concern. Margaret looked shocked. Celestia accepted the farewell calmly. She believed she was stepping toward the life she deserved. As the train began moving, she leaned against the window and watched Yorkshire slowly disappear behind her. The station grew smaller. The familiar countryside faded into the distance. A smile spread across her face. Ahead of her lay London. Ahead of her lay greatness, and she was certain the future would prove she had been right all along.
London announced itself long before Celestia stepped onto its crowded streets. Smoke rose above endless rows of buildings. Horse-drawn carriages rattled across stone roads. Elegant ladies moved beneath colourful parasols, while gentlemen in fine coats entered grand establishments lined with polished windows and ornate decorations. Everywhere she looked, there was movement, wealth, and opportunity. The city exceeded every dream she had carried with her from Yorkshire. The village she had left behind suddenly felt unimaginably small. For several days, Celestia explored the fashionable districts with excitement she could barely contain. She admired luxurious storefronts displaying silk gowns imported from Paris, sparkling jewelry arranged beneath glass cases, and restaurants serving meals more expensive than her family could have afforded in weeks. She felt as though she had finally arrived where she belonged.
It did not take long for others to notice her. At a social gathering hosted by a wealthy widow, conversations slowed when Celestia entered the room. Heads turned, ladies whispered behind delicate fans, gentlemen glanced repeatedly in her direction. By the end of the evening, several people had asked for introductions. The following week brought another invitation, then another, then another. Her beauty became a topic of discussion among London's social circles. Hostesses who competed fiercely for influential guests suddenly wanted Celestia present at their events. Invitations arrived so frequently that she sometimes struggled to keep track of them. Within months, her calendar was filled with dinners, concerts, garden parties, and grand balls illuminated by crystal chandeliers. The attention thrilled her. At every gathering, men sought opportunities to speak with her. Some waited patiently for a dance. Others attempted to impress her with stories of family estates, investments, or political connections. A few openly competed against one another. Celestia enjoyed watching them try. Flowers began arriving at her residence nearly every morning. Fresh roses, white lilies, orchids carefully imported from distant places. The florist responsible for most of the deliveries soon knew her name without needing to read the cards attached to the bouquets. Even jewelers became interested. Several sent samples hoping she might wear their pieces at public events. Necklaces adorned with gemstones, delicate bracelets, elegant brooches. Every gift reinforced the idea that she was exceptional. The praise she had received in Yorkshire seemed insignificant compared to the admiration she enjoyed in London. With every passing month, her confidence expanded. Unfortunately, so did her arrogance. An earl sought her hand in marriage. He possessed a magnificent estate, considerable wealth, and a respected family name. Most women would have considered him an extraordinary match. Celestia rejected him after deciding he was older than she preferred. She barely considered his proposal before dismissing it. Several weeks later, a viscount became interested. He was charming, intelligent, and admired throughout society. After spending an evening in his company, Celestia informed a friend that she could never marry him. The reason was surprisingly simple. She disliked the sound of his laugh. The explanation spread through several social circles and became the subject of private amusement. Still, the attention continued. Then came a wealthy baron whose fortune exceeded that of many noble families. His properties generated enormous income. His future appeared secure. He offered everything necessary for comfort and prestige. Celestia rejected him as well. Not because of any flaw, simply because she believed someone greater would eventually appear. Each refusal strengthened her conviction that she was destined for something extraordinary. Letters occasionally arrived from Yorkshire. Eleanor wrote regularly. She described village life, family news, and changing seasons. Samuel included short messages asking whether she was happy. Agnes wrote kind letters despite the way Celestia had treated her. Many remained unanswered. The farther Celestia moved into London's elite society, the less interest she showed in life back home. Weeks often passed without her mentioning her family. Months slipped by without serious thought of Yorkshire. One afternoon, another letter arrived. The handwriting immediately caught her attention. Lord Theodore Ashcroft. She recognized it instantly. For a moment, she stared at the envelope. Then she placed it aside. Hours later, she finally opened it. Theodore's message was polite and sincere. He asked about her well-being and hoped London had treated her kindly. There was no bitterness, no accusation, no complaint, only genuine concern. Celestia folded the letter and placed it in a drawer. She never replied. As her social status continued rising, she developed a habit of speaking about her future in increasingly ambitious terms. In conversations, she occasionally hinted that ordinary noble titles no longer interested her. Sometimes she joked that destiny had greater plans. Other times, she openly declared she belonged among royalty. Most people assumed she was exaggerating. Celestia believed every word. One evening, after returning from another lavish gathering, she found a sealed envelope waiting among the day's correspondence. The elegant handwriting belonged to Margaret Hensley. Curious, she broke the seal and unfolded the letter. As her eyes moved across the page, she discovered the reason for Margaret's message. Her best friend was getting married, and she wanted Celestia to attend the wedding. The journey back to Yorkshire felt different from the one Celestia had taken years earlier. When she first left the village, she had been an ambitious young woman chasing dreams of wealth and royalty. Now she returned wearing elegant London fashions, carrying expensive luggage, and speaking with the confidence of someone accustomed to moving among society's most admired circles. Villagers immediately noticed the change. The moment she stepped from the carriage, curious faces appeared along the streets. Women admired the quality of her dresses. Young girls whispered about the ribbons decorating her hat. Men removed their caps respectfully as she passed. The attention pleased her. Margaret's wedding had become the biggest event the village had seen in months. Houses were decorated with flowers gathered from nearby fields, fresh bread baked in nearly every kitchen. Long wooden tables had been arranged for the celebration, covered with white cloths and filled with roasted meats, pies, cakes, and baskets overflowing with fruit. The entire village seemed determined to celebrate. When Celestia first saw Margaret on the wedding morning, she was surprised. Margaret looked genuinely happy, not excited because of wealth, not overwhelmed by status, simply happy. Her smile appeared natural and effortless. Standing beside her was the groom, Dr. William Hensley, a respected physician who served several surrounding villages. He was neither noble nor wealthy, but his reputation was excellent. Families trusted him. Patients admired him. He treated people with kindness and patience. Celestia could not understand why Margaret appeared so satisfied. As the ceremony concluded and the reception began, guests filled the hall with laughter and conversation. Music drifted through the room while children ran between tables carrying slices of cake. Margaret introduced her husband proudly. Several villagers congratulated the newlyweds. Then Celestia spoke. "A doctor?" she asked. The words immediately drew attention. Margaret politely smiled. "Yes." Celestia examined William carefully. "I always imagined you would marry someone more important." The conversation around them began to fade. William remained courteous. Margaret's smile weakened slightly. Celestia continued, "You were one of the prettiest girls in the village." Several nearby guests exchanged uneasy glances. "You could have aimed much higher." The atmosphere shifted. Margaret looked embarrassed. William attempted to redirect the conversation, but Celestia was enjoying herself too much. She leaned closer. Surely this was not the best option available. A heavy silence settled over the table. The newly married couple sat frozen. No one seemed certain how to respond. Even guests seated several places away could sense the discomfort. An elderly woman quietly looked down at her plate. Another guest shook his head. Margaret's cheeks flushed with humiliation. The celebration eventually continued, but the damage had already been done. Later that afternoon, Margaret found Celestia standing alone outside the hall. The sounds of music drifted through an open window behind them. For several moments, neither woman spoke. Then Margaret broke the silence.
"Why did you say those things?"
Celestia looked genuinely confused.
"I was being honest."
Margaret stared at her. "You embarrassed my husband." "I simply pointed out facts." Margaret shook her head. "No." Her voice remained calm.
"No, you pointed out what matters to you."
Celestia folded her arms. Margaret continued.
"William is loyal. He is kind. He treats people with respect. He makes me happy. That matters more than titles, almost."
Celestia almost laughed. She had heard similar advice from her parents for years. To her, it sounded like another excuse people used when they could not obtain something better.
"You only say that because this is what you managed to get. If a duke had asked for your hand, You would not be standing here talking about loyalty.
Margaret lowered her eyes. For the first time since Celestia had arrived, genuine sadness crossed her face. The conversation ended shortly afterwards. There was nothing left to say. The following morning, Celestia prepared to leave Yorkshire once again. Margaret came to say goodbye. Despite everything that had happened, she remained polite. As workers loaded luggage onto the carriage, Margaret offered one final piece of advice. Happiness does not always arrive wearing a crown. Celestia smiled confidently. Perhaps, she adjusted her gloves, but my future certainly will. Margaret knew arguing was pointless. Celestia climbed into the carriage, believing her destiny remained far greater than anything Yorkshire could offer. As the vehicle rolled away, Margaret stood watching from the roadside. There was no anger in her expression, only concern. She feared her friend was chasing something that did not exist. Days later, Celestia returned to London's glittering social world. The invitations resumed, the parties continued, the admiration remained constant. Then something unexpected happened. Among the newest names seeking her attention was one that immediately caught the interest of everyone in society. A powerful duke had begun pursuing Miss Celestia Blythe.
The years that followed were everything Celestia had imagined when she first arrived in London. Her name circulated through drawing rooms, private clubs, grand estates, and elegant ballrooms. Wealthy families spoke about her beauty during dinners. Society hostesses competed for the privilege of including her on guest lists. Young ladies envied her. Men admired her openly. The attention never seemed to end. Every social season brought new admirers. Some arrived with family fortunes stretching back generations. Others possessed impressive titles and influence within the highest circles of society. Celestia accepted their attention as though it were her natural right. Among those pursuing her was a duke whose reputation made him one of the most desirable men in England. His estates covered vast portions of the countryside. His family had connections reaching deep into government and aristocratic society. Newspapers frequently mentioned his name. Mothers dreamed of securing him as a husband for their daughters. When he expressed interest in Celestia, many believed she had finally achieved what she had always wanted. The Duke treated her generously. He invited her to prestigious gatherings. He introduced her to influential people. He spoke openly about a future together. For a brief period, society assumed an engagement announcement was inevitable. Instead, Celestia rejected him. The decision shocked nearly everyone. Several friends attempted to understand her reasoning. The answer remained simple. He was not royal. No matter how wealthy he was, no matter how respected he was, no matter how powerful he was, he did not possess the one thing Celestia wanted most, a crown. The rejection became a source of fascination throughout social circles. Some admired her confidence, others considered her foolish. Celestia ignored every opinion except her own. Then, the opportunity she had spent years imagining finally appeared. One morning, an invitation arrived. The seal alone was enough to make her heart race. A royal gathering, the kind of event attended by members of the royal family and the highest ranks of society. As she read the invitation, excitement swept through her. The moment she had been waiting for had finally arrived. She became convinced destiny was unfolding exactly as she had predicted. For weeks, the gathering occupied her thoughts. She ordered new gowns. She selected jewelry with extraordinary care. She studied details about the guests expected to attend. Every aspect of her appearance received careful attention. Nothing was left to chance. By the evening of the event, Celestia felt completely certain of herself. The royal residence glowed beneath hundreds of lights. Carriages lined the entrance. Servants moved efficiently among arriving guests. Inside, enormous chandeliers illuminated polished floors and magnificent decorations. Music floated through the grand halls, while conversations filled the air. The entire scene seemed pulled from one of the illustrations she had admired years earlier in Yorkshire.
As she entered, admiration followed. People noticed her immediately. Several guests turned to watch her pass. Others whispered her name. The reaction strengthened her confidence. Everything was proceeding exactly as she expected. Then she saw him, a prince, young, handsome, elegant, the embodiment of every dream she had carried since leaving home. For a moment, she simply watched him from across the room. This was the future she had spent years pursuing. Gathering her composure, she approached. Her posture remained graceful, her smile carefully measured. When introductions were made, she spoke with complete confidence. The prince listened politely, acknowledged her presence, exchanged a few pleasant words. Then, something happened that Celestia had never considered possible. His attention drifted elsewhere. Another conversation drew his interest. Moments later, he excused himself. There was no special interest, no fascination, no invitation to continue speaking, no sign that she had made a lasting impression. Celestia stood motionless. The prince moved on. Throughout the evening, she remained hopeful he might return. He never did. Instead, he spent his time speaking with diplomats, nobles, military officers, and other guests. Hours passed. The prince barely looked in her direction again. For perhaps the first time in her adult life, admiration failed to appear where she expected it most. The experience wounded her pride far more deeply than she wished to admit. By the time the evening ended, disappointment had hardened into anger. She left the gathering furious. Inside her carriage, she replayed every moment repeatedly. The prince should have noticed her. He should have recognized her beauty. He should have been impressed. At least, that was what she believed. Rather than questioning herself, she blamed him. She blamed the rigid customs of royal society. She blamed circumstances. Anyone but herself. Days passed, then weeks. Gradually, the sting faded. Celestia convinced herself that another opportunity would appear. Another prince, another royal gathering, another chance to secure the future she believed she deserved. And so she continued waiting. Meanwhile, the social season came to an end. The grand parties grew less frequent, the music quieted, the celebrations faded. Without fanfare or announcement, another year slipped quietly into the past.
Time moved forward, whether Celestia acknowledged it or not. Seasons changed across London. Winter snow gave way to spring blossoms. Summer garden parties transformed into autumn gatherings lit by lanterns and candlelight. The city's social calendar continued its endless cycle, introducing new faces each year. At first, the changes seemed insignificant. A younger woman received attention at one event. Another became the subject of conversation at a dinner party. A third appeared frequently in society columns. Celestia paid little attention. She had spent years occupying the center of every room. She assumed her position was secure. Yet society possessed a short memory. New beauties arrived constantly. Daughters of wealthy families entered social circles for the first time. Young women fresh from finishing schools appeared at balls wearing elegant gowns and carrying the excitement of youth. Their names quickly spread through drawing rooms and private gatherings. Gradually, conversations shifted. People who once discussed Celestia began discussing someone else. The change was subtle at first, then impossible to ignore. Invitations still arrived, but not with the same frequency. Entire weeks sometimes passed without a major event requesting her presence. The endless stream of flowers slowed considerably. Jewelry boxes no longer appeared at her door every few days. Men who once competed fiercely for her attention now escorted younger women into ballrooms. The transformation irritated her. Rather than accepting it, she became increasingly critical of those replacing her. At social gatherings, she often commented on their flaws. One girl's voice was too loud, another lacked elegance, a third was attractive but not truly beautiful. Whenever others praised the newest favorites of society, Celestia found reasons to disagree. She frequently claimed standards had declined. According to her, London had become obsessed with mediocrity.
Most people simply smiled politely and changed the subject. The criticism did little to restore the attention she had lost. Amid these frustrations, another letter arrived from Yorkshire. This one came from Agnes. Her sister was getting married. The announcement surprised Celestia. Agnes had always seemed content with simple things. Marriage had never appeared urgent to her. Still, family obligations required attendance. Several weeks later, Celestia returned to Yorkshire once again. The village remained much as she remembered. The stone cottages stood unchanged. Children played in familiar streets. The scent of fresh bread drifted from local kitchens. Only the people seemed older. Agnes's wedding lacked the grandeur of London's finest ceremonies, yet there was warmth everywhere. Neighbours helped prepare food. Families contributed flowers. Guests arrived carrying homemade gifts and sincere congratulations. The groom was a schoolmaster named Thomas Reed. He was neither wealthy nor influential. His clothes were modest. His manners were gentle. The affection between him and Agnes was obvious. During the reception, Celestia watched the newlyweds with growing disbelief. She could not understand how her sister appeared so content. Eventually, she voiced her opinion. "You truly intend to spend your life with a schoolmaster?" Several nearby guests fell silent. Agnes nodded. "Yes." Celestia glanced around the room. "This is enough for you." The question carried unmistakable judgment. Thomas remained polite. Agnes remained calm. "It is." Celestia shook her head. "You could not imagine anything greater." A few guests exchanged uncomfortable looks. Agnes smiled softly. "I am marrying a man who loves me." She reached for Thomas's hand. "And respects me." The simplicity of the answer irritated Celestia. She laughed, not loudly, but loudly enough. Several guests frowned. One elderly woman looked away in disappointment. A local farmer whispered something to his wife. Others pretended not to notice. Celestia noticed every reaction. She felt judged. The realization annoyed her far more than she cared to admit. The remainder of the celebration passed awkwardly. Before long, she returned to London carrying irritation rather than fond memories. The years continued advancing. 26, 27, 28, 29. Her reflections still pleased her, but society's enthusiasm continued fading. Each social season brought another group of younger women eager to establish themselves. The admiration that once seemed permanent had proven temporary. When her 30th birthday arrived, there were no grand announcements, no extraordinary celebrations, no prince, no royal engagement, only another year. The gossip grew harsher after that. People remembered her long list of rejected suitors. Stories spread through drawing rooms and dinner parties. Some exaggerated details, others repeated facts. Gradually, a reputation formed around her. She became known as the woman who rejected everyone. The phrase followed her from one gathering to another. Some said it with amusement, others with pity, a few with quiet satisfaction. Then one evening, after reviewing the months behind her, Celestia made a discovery that left her staring silently across her sitting room. An entire social season had passed. Not one man had proposed marriage. Not one.
The realization stayed with Celestia long after that social season ended. An entire year had passed without a proposal. Years earlier, such a thing would have seemed impossible. There had once been a time when invitations arrived faster than she could answer them, and admirers competed openly for her attention. Now the silence felt unfamiliar. At first, she told herself it was temporary. The next season would be different. The right opportunity would appear. Someone worthy would arrive. Yet as the weeks passed, another thought began returning to her mind. Theodore. Lord Theodore Ashcroft. Unlike the others, he had never pursued her because of reputation or status. He had loved her before London, before the grand parties, before society knew her name. The memory became difficult to ignore. She remembered the flowers he brought, the patience he showed, the way he had continued returning even after she humiliated him.
The more she thought about him, the more convinced she became that his feelings could not have disappeared completely. Surely a man who loved her that deeply could not simply forget. The idea slowly transformed into hope. Within a few weeks, Celestia found herself travelling back to Yorkshire once again. The countryside appeared peaceful beneath a pale morning sky. Farmers worked distant fields, while smoke drifted lazily from cottage chimneys. Everything looked familiar, yet strangely distant. She had left this place years ago, believing she was destined for something greater. Now she returned, searching for what she once dismissed. After arriving in the village, she wasted little time asking about Theodore. The answer came quickly. He had married years earlier. The news struck her harder than she expected. Still unwilling to accept it fully, she travelled to the neighbouring estate where he lived. The house was beautiful, without being extravagant. Children's laughter drifted through an open window. Flower gardens surrounded the property. The entire place carried an atmosphere of comfort and peace. Then she saw him. Theodore stood outside with a young boy perched on his shoulders, while a little girl chased butterflies nearby. A woman stood beside him, laughing at something he had said. His wife. For several moments, Celestia simply watched. The scene felt painfully ordinary, yet it contained everything she had spent years searching for. When Theodore noticed her, he greeted her politely. There was no bitterness in his voice, no anger, no resentment, only courtesy. They spoke briefly. He asked about her journey, her health, life in London. Nothing more. The affection she had once taken for granted was gone. The realization hurt more than any insult ever could. When she left his property, she carried a heaviness she could not shake. Over the following days, she visited other former suitors. The pattern repeated itself again and again. Most were married, many had children, several had become successful businessmen, respected landowners, and influential members of their communities. The lives she once rejected had continued without her. One afternoon, she visited Margaret. The modest house was filled with warmth. The smell of freshly baked bread drifted from the kitchen. Children's voices echoed through nearby rooms. Margaret looked older than when they had last spoken, yet there was contentment in her expression. Her husband greeted Celestia kindly. Watching them together felt uncomfortable, not because they were wealthy, because they were happy. Later, she visited Agnes. The sight waiting for her there proved even more difficult. The sister she had mocked for years now possessed the very life Celestia had once ridiculed. A loving husband, children who adored her, a home filled with laughter. Agnes welcomed her warmly, despite everything that had happened between them. The kindness only deepened Celestia's discomfort. Everywhere she went, she encountered reminders of choices she had made. The farmer whose land she considered too small now owned one of the most successful properties in the region. The merchant she dismissed because of his accent operated thriving businesses across several towns. The young man whose smile she disliked now walked proudly beside a wife who clearly loved him. One by one, the people she had rejected seemed to have built meaningful lives. Meanwhile, she remained alone. The village noticed. Whispers followed her through market streets. Women lowered their voices when she passed. Some conversations stopped altogether. Others did not. Fragments of gossip reached her ears. People remembered. The woman who rejected noblemen. The woman who waited too long. The woman who thought nobody was good enough. The stories became lessons. Several mothers quietly warned their daughters not to repeat her mistakes. Young girls listened. The humiliation was impossible to escape. By the end of her visit, Yorkshire no longer felt like home. Every familiar road carried memories. Every conversation reminded her of opportunities that would never return. Theodore had moved on. The others had moved on. Even the village itself seemed to have moved on. Only Celestia remained trapped in the past. One cold morning, she packed her belongings and left without saying much to anyone. The train carried her away from Yorkshire once again. This time, there were no dreams waiting at the other end of the journey. No excitement, no grand ambitions, only silence. And after returning to London, Miss Celestia Blythe disappeared from society completely.
8 years passed quietly. The world that had once revolved around Celestia Blythe no longer knew her name. She had left London behind and settled in a small village far from the grand estates, crowded ballrooms, and fashionable streets that once occupied her every thought. Her cottage stood near the edge of the village, beside a narrow road lined with wildflowers and old oak trees. It was modest but comfortable, with a small vegetable garden behind the house and shelves filled with books collected over the years. Life had become simple. Mornings were spent tending flowers and herbs. Afternoons often passed with a book resting in her lap while sunlight filtered through the windows. Evenings were quiet, accompanied by the crackling sound of a fireplace and the distant songs of birds returning to their nests. The mirror no longer occupied a place of importance in her life. The beauty that once attracted attention across London had softened with age. Time had left its marks as it leaves them on everyone. The realization no longer frightened her. Few people in the village knew who she had once been. To them, she was simply Miss Blythe, a quiet woman who kept mostly to herself. Occasionally, she traveled to visit Agnes and Margaret. Their children had grown remarkably over the years. Agnes's oldest son was nearly a man. Margaret's daughters had become bright young women. Their homes remained full of warmth, conversation, and the comforting chaos that accompanies family life. Celestia always enjoyed those visits. Yet when she returned to her cottage afterward, the silence felt heavier. One pleasant afternoon during late spring, she sat beneath a large oak tree overlooking the village green. Children chased one another across the grass, while neighbors exchanged greetings beneath clear blue skies. That was when she noticed a young woman attracting attention wherever she went. The girl was beautiful, remarkably beautiful. Young men seemed eager to speak with her. Older women complimented her appearance. People naturally noticed her the moment she entered a conversation. The sight stirred memories Celestia had not revisited in some time. The girl reminded her of herself. Several days later, their paths crossed again. The young woman introduced herself and quickly began speaking about the men pursuing her. There was excitement in her voice, pride too. She described gifts she had received and invitations she had accepted. When discussing certain admirers, she laughed openly. One local merchant was dismissed because he lacked wealth, another because she considered him ordinary, a third because she believed she could do better. Then she mentioned her greatest ambition, a prince. The certainty in her voice sounded painfully familiar. Celestia listened without interruption. The conversation continued for nearly an hour. Eventually, she tilted her head curiously. "What about you?" Celestia smiled politely. "What about me? Did you ever marry?" The question lingered between them. For a moment, Celestia looked toward the distant hills beyond the village. Then she answered honestly, "No." The young woman appeared surprised. Someone as elegant as Miss Blythe surely must have had opportunities. Curiosity quickly replaced surprise. Celestia understood exactly what she wanted to know. So she told her. Not a shortened version, not a comfortable version, the truth. She spoke about the men who pursued her, the farmers, the merchants, the gentlemen, the noblemen. She described the gifts she accepted and the hearts she dismissed. She spoke of Theodore Ashcroft and the way she publicly humiliated him despite his sincere affection. She described London, the attention, the admiration, the endless praise. She admitted how much she had enjoyed being desired. The young woman's expression slowly changed. The confidence disappeared. Celestia continued. She admitted that she had been cruel. She admitted that she had mistaken admiration for happiness. She admitted that she believed beauty placed her above others. The words felt uncomfortable even after all those years, yet she forced herself to say them. The young woman sat quietly, stunned. The story she heard was nothing like the future she imagined for herself. As the afternoon drifted toward evening, Celestia offered one final warning. Opportunities do not wait forever. The young woman lowered her eyes. Celestia's voice remained calm. There is always a reason to wait for something better. She looked toward the village road.
but time has a habit of moving while we are busy waiting. The sun slowly descended toward the horizon. Families began making their way home. Children ran ahead of their parents. Husbands walked beside wives. Neighbors exchanged cheerful farewells before disappearing behind cottage doors. The familiar scene unfolded exactly as it had countless times before. Celestia watched quietly. There was no bitterness left within her, only understanding. The young woman remained beside her, listening carefully. As golden light settled across the village, Celestia shared the lesson she had taken her entire life to learn. Beauty attracts attention, but character earns love. Her gaze followed a family walking together along the road. Pride convinces us we have endless time. The evening breeze stirred the branches overhead. Life rarely agrees. The village gradually grew quieter as darkness approached, and beneath the fading light, Celestia Blythe sat peacefully, carrying the wisdom she had gained from every mistake she could never undo.